It's strange because, I mean, it wasn't a job. It was almost a way of life. You were there all day, every day. I lived on site. And my wife still works there. I have visitors every week from ex-staff.
So you haven't quite let go completely.
No, I haven't. And I obviously, having spent 35 years there, I still have an interest in its future and what's happening there. And it's not something you can just switch off to, really.
You say 35 years you've spent with the RSPCA.
I did, yes.
But not all of it at Stubbington, I think, which is rather newer, isn't it?
It is indeed, yes. I joined the Portsmouth branch of the RSPCA in the mid-70s and worked at their Park Gate shelter, which was overworked, underfunded, and falling down. So my first 10 years there was spent trying to find a way out that would hold more animals and in better conditions. We achieved that by raising money and building the Stubbington Ark and moving into there in 1987. So that's 26 years ago.
So you were instrumental in building it from farmland, I believe.
It was originally the Ranville's Farm Animal Shelter, but the local populace dubbed us the Ark at Stubbington, and it's stuck and we've never been able to get rid of it. But it's lovely because people are wonderful. They give us things. It's not just raising money, it's amazing what we can utilise, or I'm saying we can, they can utilise.
You still use the present tense. You still think that you're there, don't you, really?
Well, yes, yeah. I'm aware what goes on. I keep in touch because nowadays, of course, they've got websites and as I say, the staff visit here regularly. We're telling me what's going on and what's happening, and I don't think you ever let go of something like that. It drags you along behind it as it moves on.
There's a hard-nosed business edge to the RSPCA now, isn't there?
There has to be, yes. When I left there, which is only about 7 or 8 months ago, the daily running costs were over £3,500 a day. You don't get that by just shaking tin. So, of course,
that has to go on
that
still,
has
doesn't
to
it?
go on. It does, yes. But we need professional fundraising to justify that kind of expenditure, because costs go up and up. Staff costs, they don't get brilliant wages, but you've got to pay them a living wage.
And it's got to be the single most expensive part of your budget, I would think.
It is, the second being veterinary costs, because
Of
the
course.
animals nowadays need far more up-to-date methods and caring. And that's why a few years ago we invested in building our own veterinary centre there. The first year of running that saved us £48,000 in vet fees.
Wow.
And that's having spent £500,000 to build the centre and equip it. But it's really, every animal there gets top of the range veterinary care. And we supply that. The RSPCA supply that because, it would be far too expensive to go out to private veterinary units. I mean, we're dealing probably with, £89,000 animals a year.
Is it that many?
It is that many. In some ways, it's a bit less now because hopefully our neutering campaigns have worked over the years. And we get less. But I was sitting down when I retired at my retirement do, as it were, and somebody asked me, how many animals do you think you've handled? And incalculable, really. But I reckon that personally, my time there at the Ark and its predecessor have rescued something like, a third of a million animals. And that's in a 30
You
year
astound
period.
me.
It astounded me when I sat down and did the sums. But that's how many animals are going through, and that's just one shelter in the south of England. The problems that they were dealing with 200 years ago, plus all the new ones, such as animal experimentation and things, and even things like that come into the being of a shelter. We rescue animals from not just the general public. I think there's a concept that the great British public are a nation of animal lovers, but we used to say they're a nation of animal keepers. They don't always love them. They get them for whims, a trendy type of dog, that kind of thing, something to cuddle for the kids instead of a cuddly toy. So we were dealing with that all the time and still are, unwanted pets.
Well, you're not going to change human nature, are you?
No, you're not. Realistically, you're not. People want things. You know, I always said that, you know, to drive a car, you have to go out, learn to drive and get a license. And in some ways, I would still say that. It may be contentious, but you shouldn't really be able to acquire pets just ad lib like that. You should have to pass some sort of test. What I wouldn't like to devise it, but something that made sure that you knew how to care for the animal's need, not just feed it and water it. Anybody can feed and water any animal, but you need to know how to look after it properly, the kind of environment it needs. You know, you don't want little budgies and gerbils and things stuck in a tin box, or which some cages are. And similarly with dogs and cats, they need to be able to live a fairly normal life. And it's so easy to look after pets. All you have to do is look at what that animal does in the wild, or would do, and give it as near to that as you can.
But you don't think, I can understand where you're coming from, but you don't think that it's one more raft of legislation that people actually don't need?
No, I don't think it needs. There isn't that much legislation around. Anyway, I think what it needs is a raft of common sense that if you're going to keep an animal, at least know basically how to look after it. And goodness knows, I mean, nowadays with the media and animal programs on television, you don't have to walk far. Nearly everybody has a mobile phone or a computer that can tell you anything about any animal in the world, really. It doesn't take a lot of knowledge to look after an animal successfully. People, you know, maybe some of the equipment does, but it's just common sense, and almost down to the fact that treat animals as you would like to treat yourself.